It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Monson Show. I am Kim Monson. Be sure and check out our website, kimmonson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly email newsletter. Lots of great information there. We're going to have three amazing podcasts, two great op-eds. So be sure and sign up for that. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. We'd greatly appreciate that as well. Big show planned for you today. We'll be talking with three men who are stepping forward to run for office, and we're going to find out why. And that is Grady Nuis running for HD 48, Justin Everett running for HD 22, and Doug Townsend running for SD 31. They have all been endorsed by the Republican Liberty Caucus, so we'll find out why.
You know, I got to step in here for a second. The way you introduced them, three men who are stepping forward. Everything I ingest these days makes me want to run the other way. So the fact that these guys are stepping forward says or speaks volumes.
And that is for sure. So we'll be talking with them very soon. And then Tom Petrie with Petrie Partners. He's an oil and gas energy expert, and he is with the oil and gas investment banking firm Petrie Partners. We'll be talking about the oil and gas issues going on right now, both on a geopolitical standpoint as well as our independent oil and gas producers. And then we're going to have a great story of tenacity and perseverance and grit. And that is something, Steve, these days that we need to hear more of those stories. So you're going to love that, I am sure. So that voice that you heard was producer Steve. And we have this great team of Steve, Patty, Zach, Keith, and Charlie. So thank you. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, and from the rest of the team, good morning.
And to each of you listeners, you're treasured, you're valued, you have a purpose. Today, be industrious, productive. That's something about being Americans. We're industrious and productive, and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. As we look at these issues, Rudyard Kipling says, I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. And we look at these issues and we see freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Or many times right now, freedom versus fear, fear versus freedom. And that is why it is so important that we talk about these important issues that are facing us. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. If something is a good idea, you should not have to force people. People should be able to freely persuade others to that idea.
Let's throw out two good examples there, because I think sometimes people say, well, nobody's forcing me to do anything. How many years ago now? Probably, let's see, where are we here? How many years ago was it when Obamacare was coming down the track? And basically, if you didn't sign up, you were going to be punished. So that's the force we're talking about. And there's probably lots of other examples, too.
That was historical, because that was the first time in American history that you could be penalized for not doing something. And that is really antithetical to freedom. So very good example on that, Steve. A couple of things that you need to be aware of. Due date too late, which is the ballot initiative to get it on the ballot this November, that we would not have late-term abortions in Colorado. I think a lot of people don't realize that you can abort a baby right up until the day of birth. And babies start to feel, for sure we know, pain at 22 weeks. So this would cut off abortions at 22 weeks. And it's so interesting that Governor Polis is, you know, Mr. Executive Order, issued an executive order that said in the future, in the petition process, that and there's things that the radical activists left wants to get onto the ballot, that they're going to be able to get signatures via email and mail-in. This, though, with Juliana Day and Due Date Too Late, is they are requiring people to go out and get actual signatures and have them notarized. And I checked, Steve, and my signature was kicked out because it said that there was something with the notary. So if you want to make sure that your signature took, if you, in fact, did sign that, text Juliana Day at 720-899-0897. Again, 720-899-0897. And then go to duedatetoolate.com, and they have all the different places where you can go and you can sign a petition again. And then on May 27th at 7 p.m. at Water's Edge Winery, they will have a notary there for all of you that have petitions out there and need to get them notarized. You can meet there, and Juliana really would like to have those petitions back to her by the 27th because she needs to turn those in pretty quick. And then also Jen Hewlin, as you know, she has been at the forefront to get businesses opened up. And Tri-County Health has been pretty draconian about that. So she's got legal costs, certainly operating costs. And go to freedomfi.com and put in Jen, help Jen and Water's Edge Winery. And she'd really greatly appreciate, I'd greatly appreciate it if you get some a few bucks over her, over to her as well. Our inspiration for the day, I know I have to watch the time here a bit. James Michener. Did you read any of James Michener's books, Steve?
I'm sorry, wrong button. I attempted to, but the length, and I've just recently came across someone else talking about trying to read, was it Hawaii, one of his books?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
He said the length, it just goes on and on and on. So, you know, did I get to completion? No.
Meticulous research on that. And James Albert Michener was an American author. He wrote more than 40 books, most of which were lengthy, fictional family sagas covering the lives of many generations in particular geographic locales and incorporating very solid history. He had written Centennial, which was about Colorado. And I read that.
That was the one. That was the one I attempted to read.
Yeah. And he actually attended three different colleges, but he attended the University of Northern Colorado. And so it is an excellent book, but he also wrote Tales of the South Pacific. So, and they're lengthy, but man, you learn a lot. But he said this, and I was choosing Tenacity quotes because when we talk with Tom Petrie, this is an amazing story. So this is what James Michener said. He said, whatever I did, there was always someone around who was better qualified. They just didn't bother to do it. And I thought that was a pretty good quote. And James Michener was born in 1907. He died in 1997 at the age of 90. And, okay, and our quote, our funnies for today. Are you ready for this?
Oh, yeah, I need it.
Okay. Day one of quarantine. I stocked up on enough non-perishable food items and supplies to last 9 months, maybe year, or to last me months, or maybe years, so that I can remain in isolation for as long as it takes to see out this pandemic. Day two, I'm at the grocery store getting ice cream. Two things before we get to Grady Nuis that I just wanted to make sure that you guys were aware of. First of all, Fox News yesterday reported that the CDC now says that the coronavirus does not spread easily via contaminated surfaces. So I have to ask, why on earth did we close down all of our playgrounds and all of our parks? Because now the CDC says it doesn't spread easily. Steve, I just can't believe it. And the other thing is there's some significant mask shaming going on right now. Apparently, President Trump is going to be visiting the Ford plant in Michigan today, and the Michigan Attorney General is saying that he has a responsibility to wear a mask. And so this is a significant mask shaming. We'll know tomorrow what happens. I'm going to find it very interesting, so stay tuned on that. Let's jump over here, though. Grady Nuis is running for House District 48 here in Colorado. He's been endorsed by the Republican Liberty Caucus. Grady Nuis, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me on this morning, Kim.
So you are stepping forward to run for the House of Representatives here in Colorado. Tell us why.
Yeah, I've been active in conservative politics here in Colorado for a handful of years. And when I looked at the Republican Liberty Caucus scorecard in 2019, it showed that 24 out of our 40 Republican legislators had a D 4 or lower in the evaluation of over 75 bills in regards to free markets, limited government, fiscal responsibility. And I refuse to have another Republican carry a D rating in my district. So I said, why not be the candidate? I'll stand for the principles of the Constitution and what true conservatism is, and I'll stand for the values here, right here in Will County.
You know, Grady, I was on a walk yesterday with a friend of mine, and we were talking about Republican conservative. As she said that she had a friend that they were having a conversation. The person said, oh, you're just a Republican. She said, you know what? Actually, I'm a conservative. And of course, conservative has gotten a bad rap over the years. There's been kind of this definition that maybe conservatives want to control your life. Actually, conservative means to me, Grady, to preserve the ideas of the American founding, which basically there is a whole lot of freedom in that and civil rights. And so I think it's important that people understand that conservative means to conserve those founding principles. So I was so pleased when you said that you're a conservative.
Yeah, no, you know, in my race, I'm the conservative, and I have somebody running against me who refuses to use that word. And, you know, so at the end of the day, there's definitely a huge difference in my race here in House District 48. And I want my kids to be able to grow up in the same or better environment than what I get to grow up in right now in Colorado. So, you know, like you said, I want those values and those strongholds that my parents and grandparents talked about to be able to hold true in the future. And I just see every freedom that we have literally being washed away. And it's not just because of the socialist left here. It is because of weak Republicans. And I'm not afraid to say it.
You know, true that. I served on city council in my community, and I've seen many people with R's behind their names, and we see it right now, just capitulating on our civil rights. And true conservatism stands up for the civil rights of every individual. And so I think that this has been a huge awakening right now, Grady. So we only have just about a minute or so. How can people get more information about you, Grady Nuis?
Yes, so you can visit my website. Obviously, it's where I want people to go, which is Grady4House.com. And I'm very active on social media. I'm a big First Amendment guy, so I'd love people to start following and give input and talk about issues. You can follow me on Facebook at @Grady4House. And just one last thing. I want everybody to know that Jared Polis has actually blocked me on social media for the past 2 years, even though I've never met the gentleman or talked to him. So I'm that kind of candidate who really wants to inflict some pain on the socialist agenda.
Mr. Executive Order has blocked you, huh? Interesting.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. Grady Nuis, thank you so much. And one more time, what is that website?
Grady4House.com.
And you've been endorsed by the Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado. So, Grady, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And we're going to go to a break. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants are sponsors of my shows. I greatly appreciate that. And during this whole disruption with all of our restaurants and our bars and our taverns, it's been very difficult. But they're persevering through. They're offering their service, their products via curbside delivery. You can go to order.hooters.com and you can order your food and you can just drop by, pick it up. Steve, I know that you've done that. They have lunch specials. Kids eat free every day with the purchase of an adult entree. Their hours are Sunday through Wednesday, 11:30 to 8:30, Thursday through Saturday, 11:30 to 9. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll talk with Justin Everett, and he is a candidate for House District 22. We'll be right back.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter at kim@kimmunson.com and go over to Facebook and give us a like. We'd appreciate that. On the line with me is Justin Everett. He is running for House District 22 right here in Colorado. He has actually served in the state legislature before, and he is being endorsed. He is endorsed by the Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado. Justin Everett, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Kim.
Well, you've been down there before. You know what it's like, and you are have decided to step forward again. Why, Justin Everett? Why?
So you're asking me the question that I've gotten asked 10,000 times. Are you crazy?
Exactly.
You know, well, when I got down there in 2013, got elected in 2012, Republicans had lost their way. We were supporting things like Obamacare. We called it AmyCare. So, you know, we were doing bad things as Republicans and really not on track, especially when it came to liberty and freedom. So over the course of the 6 years I was down there, we built, you know, we took over leadership. Patrick Neville is now our minority leader. He's obviously a champion for liberty and freedom and conservative values. And things were going along well, and we're moving in the right direction as Republicans. Unfortunately, the person that replaced me does not represent those values. We were talking about the Republican Liberty Caucus, and I'm proud to have their endorsement. But he's scoring at about an F level. I think his score is about a 52 to 53. So he's somebody that doesn't represent the values not only of the district, but I think of Colorado. So after a lot of persuading and some other things that had happened, I decided to give up a lot of disposable income to go back down to the state legislature.
Well, and, you know, it's so interesting because the legislature is what's supposed to be 120 days from the first part of January, typically to the middle or the first week or so in May. But it is so much work. There is so many different bills that are coming forward. And I know that one of the things that you do, Justin, is you read everything. And quite frankly, I don't think we should be passing anything unless our legislators have and our representatives have actually read it.
Yeah, and this is the challenge, Kim, is that I'd get between 2 to 3 hours of sleep, 3 hours on Saturday nights usually, because that was when I would take an extra hour, just to keep up with all the bills. And that's just indicative of how much stuff they're putting in the pipe as to new laws. I think we almost doubled the amount of pages in statute while I was down there, and that's with my ability to persuade and kill some bad bills. So, you know, it's a major time commitment, but at the same time, I think your listeners need to know, I mean, you have to be able to put in, you know, those 20-hour days during session to be able to read everything. But I think that's just another argument of why we need smaller government and less laws. So, yeah, I'm not necessarily looking forward to that, because usually during the session, I'll get big bags underneath my eyes and put on about 20 to 25 pounds because of lack of sleep and just how you eat and schedule. But again, if you're going to fight for freedom and liberty and you're going to make that commitment to Colorado and the United States, then that's a small sacrifice to make, I think.
Well, and it's a lot of work to engage in this battle of ideas out there. And I used to think it was above my pay grade, Justin, to read this legislation, and it's not. And I would highly recommend that people, instead of reading headlines, that actually read legislation that they're concerned about so that they can engage in thoughtful conversations with their neighbors and colleagues about these different pieces of legislation. I wanted to take a look at Article 25 because we're seeing many of our representatives on the local level and all the way up to the governor's office hiding behind, I think it's title or Article 25, which is the piece of legislation that basically abdicated the responsibility of our representatives and gave all of this to these different public health agencies. Justin, when I downloaded it, it was 1,000 pages just for that piece of legislation. I mean, we need to stop that. We've got just about a minute. So what's your quick comment on that? And then how can people get more information about you?
Yeah, I mean, I served on the Public Health Committee, and every year the county health departments and all the health departments would ask for more and more police powers. And I'd get Democrats even to say no, but they've been inching away picking away and gaining more power. And we saw that on display, unfortunately, in 2020. So it's time to wake up and smell the coffee and realize just how big and obtrusive the government is. As to contacting me, the best way to get a hold of me is through my website at www.everett4, Colorado.com. Please donate. If you just $5 would be great. If you'd like to volunteer for the campaign, we have some plans coming up on how we can do that even during COVID. So please sign up with the volunteer sheet as well.
Okay, Justin Everett, that's House District 22, endorsed by the Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kim.
Okay, and let's jump over here. Doug Townsend is running for the Senate, for Senate District 31. Doug Townsend, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you again.
Okay, and you, too, have been endorsed by the Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado. Why? Why are you running?
Well, I began this campaign several months ago, concerned over the state government taking over ever larger segments of our lives and our economy with little regard for our rights and liberties. Unfortunately, these last couple of months, we've seen that attitude on steroids. I believe we need to change control of the state Senate so that we can start to provide some common sense government and really restore the rights and liberties to our citizens.
Well, and as you mentioned, we have seen our liberties and our freedom really has been curtailed, you might say, in being able to assemble, to meet with your loved ones, to run your businesses. It has been astonishing what has happened over the last 8 weeks or so, Doug Townsend.
It really is, and some of it's overreaction out of fear. You mentioned a few minutes ago on your show that the CDC came out now and said, well, we don't think that COVID's transmitted just by touching objects. All of this was a panic. It was unnecessary. You know, obviously, we have to take precautions to protect people's health, but we should never be willing to give up our rights and liberties to do that.
Well, and Doug Townsend, certainly we had this, you know, this virus that we didn't know about what it was exactly. And so it seemed initially it maybe was smart to say, you know what, we're going to take a pause. But what I've seen going through this is real leadership is very measured when they react to something serious like this. So when we had like Mayor Hancock come in and close down our restaurants and bars for 8 weeks without even knowing what was going on, you can see the difference between measured leadership and overreaching leadership.
Absolutely. You know, we hear people say, well, we need to follow the science. Well, decisions were made long before the science knew exactly what this virus did and how it acted and how it was transmitted. So to your point, we have to sit there and have measured reactions to these things. We have to respond based upon what we know. And again, at the end of the day, the rights and liberties of our citizens should always prevail. So if there is an unknown, let's default to allowing people to enjoy the rights and liberties that they have.
Okay, so how are you going to do that if you are elected to the Senate, Senate District 31?
Well, one of the keys is to change control of the state Senate. We're only two seats away from the Republicans being able to regain control. Currently, the Democrats control every element of our state government, and we need to have some balance there. We need to have some checks and balances in the system, and if we can flip two seats, then we'll be able to do that through the state Senate. I believe Senate District 31 is one of those seats that is ripe for being flipped over to the Republican side.
You know, and one other thing is it used to be I would talk to people before this whole COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption, and we were pretty fat and happy here in America. Unemployment was at record lows. You know, our store shelves were full because of free and fair markets and capitalism. And people said, oh, I'm not into politics. But as we have gone through this, we've realized that politics has been into everyday people big time with the closing down of our businesses and the lack of, or, you know, no longer being able to get together, the right to assemble and all those things in the First Amendment. I think Grady mentioned that in the other segment. And so politics truly has been into people, and we need to probably walk that back. We've got just about a minute. Doug Townsend, your comment, and then how can people reach you?
Totally agree. It just shows why a big government is the wrong solution. Politics should never play this big of a role over our lives.
And how can people reach you, Doug Townsend?
They can reach me through my website at www.dougtownsendforyou.com, and that's all spelled out, F-O-R-Y-O-U. Let me know how they would like to help out with the campaign.
Okay, and my friends, it really is important to help these people that are stepping forward, because politics is into us, and we realize as we've gone through this how important it is to conserve and preserve this great American idea. So, Doug Townsend, thank you so much. You are endorsed by the Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
Okay. And Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. It's pretty great when people are stepping forward to conserve and preserve this American idea. Don't you think, Jason?
Well, absolutely, because there's forces on the other side that are in a big, big hurry to declare us in a new normal, a new world, a new reality. Everything's new and not the same as it was before. And mostly what they seem to want to get rid of are the good values that we want to hold on to, Kim.
I know, it's been really, really astounding. But let's talk a little bit about economic well-being, the stock market. It's had a few good days, and typically it looks into the future, and right now it's saying that it kind of likes what it sees. What do you think, Jason?
Well, I think you're right, Kim. Generally, the market's looking about 6 to 9 months down the road when it's doing its thing. The NASDAQ has, it's really pretty amazing. The NASDAQ hit a high of 98.38 before all of this started. Kim, it's back to, 93.75. It's less than 10% off of the all-time high when the world supposedly supposed to be coming to an end. Now, the S&P and the Dow have lagged a little bit further behind because they don't have as big of a concentration in technology, but they're both off the bottom pretty strongly as well. So, yeah, I think the market is looking ahead, and the heck with the naysayers and the doomsayers. The market usually kind of knows what's going on before everybody else does.
Okay, so Jason, the market has been super volatile, though. And I think that is one of the things when you get into these super volatile markets like this, that people think they may have one risk tolerance, and then all of a sudden they realize, you know what, I don't sleep very well at night with this risk tolerance. And that is something that people need to sit down with professionals like you and your colleagues at Presidential to assess, because this is where you find out what your risk tolerance really is.
Well, I think that's true, Kim. It's pretty tough, for someone to walk back off the edge after they've already gotten there. So one thing I like is there are a lot of options out there that are very, very safe, that don't have any exposure to the market. In fact, they have guarantees against any losses at all. And, you can use stuff like this to make it part of your portfolio to reduce your volatility. That way you don't get to the freak-out mode where you start pulling everything apart at the seams and blow your whole plan up.
Right. And, if you plan and can stick to your plan, and certainly you can assess it, tweak it. But if you plan, you're planning for success. And I know, Jason, that is something that you all do over there. And we've got this great landing page together. You guys have podcasts. What's the latest on the podcast right now?
I'll tell you, Taylor and Keith have been doing a lot of the podcasts, and they're doing a really great job. They've come up with some great subjects, some really interesting guests on there. Now, those are all kind of being done by Zoom and remote, and I can't do it, Kim, because my internet's too slow at home, so the camera doesn't work, which, spares the listeners and the viewing audience from a lot of pain, if you ask me.
So breaking the camera, huh, Jason McBride?
That's right.
Okay, so check out airpresidential.com, airpresidential.com, and at 7:30, Natalie will be at the switchboard, 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason, thanks so much. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You too, Kim. Bye-bye.
Okay, and we're going to go to break. When we come back, we will be talking with Tom Petrie with Petrie Partners. He's an oil and gas energy expert, and he's with the oil and gas investment banking firm of Petrie Partners. We'll talk about the oil and gas industry in this next segment, and then an amazing story of just kind of tenacity and perseverance, that American grit and spirit. You will not want to miss it. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
A recent study finds that COVID-19 economic disruption could force half of small businesses to close within 6 months. Local small business owner Jen Hewlin, Waters Edge Winery, who pledged her home for the loan to start her business, chose to fully open her business last week. As a reasonable individual, she had agreed to a pause in her business until we could better understand COVID-19. The curve has been flattened. There are enough respirators. Effective treatments are available. But the bureaucrats at Tri-County Health said no and shut her down. Jen is fighting for her economic life. Help her with legal costs and operating expenses. Go to KimMunson.com for the link to help Jen through her crowdfunding campaign.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's KimMunson.com. And podcasts of the shows can be found there, as well as go over to Facebook and give us a like. We have a lot of great information there as well. This is our health and hydrocarbon show. And reliable, efficient, and affordable energy really helps people power their lives. And as we look at so many people have been in their homes during these last 8 weeks or so, it's great to have energy to be able to turn on our lights, to have heat or air conditioning, to have refrigeration of our foods, have freezers for our foods. And we have taken that for granted. And through this whole disruption, the Saudis and the Russians decided that they wanted to play chicken on the supply lines of our petroleum products, and it has really disrupted that market. So each month we've had Tom Petrie on with Petrie Partners, the oil and gas investment banking firm, to explain to us what is happening. So, Tom Petrie, welcome to the show.
Good to be back, Kim.
So what is going on? It has been wild over the last 8-10 weeks in the oil and gas industry. What's happening now?
Well, I think both Saudi Arabia and Russia had an epiphany, and they came to the conclusion that it was costing them far too much to try to bend the shale supply curve with oil below 20. And notwithstanding a very public falling apart, they got back together. They haven't made it very public that they got back together, but actions speak louder than words. And what's become clear is that they have recognized that their actions that took oil from above 40 to below 20 was something they couldn't live with for very long. So we've just crossed, just 2 days ago, we had that expiration date for contract futures. And it was a month earlier that we'd had actually negative oil prices during that contract expiration date. We came through this one fine, in no small part because the body language coming out of Saudi Arabia was one of, we're going to underpromise and overdeliver on our cuts, and they did. They not only did what they said they'd do on the cuts, they then came through with another million barrel a day reduction. Saudi Arabia elected not to interfere with any of that, and if anything, showed an inclination to be supportive, not to be totally coordinated, but certainly to be supportive. As a result, what do we have now? We have U.S. oil, WTI, in the mid-30s, $34 a barrel today, and just under $37 a barrel for Brent. And so we're on the road to a recovery, but it's not one that's going to be nice and smooth. I think there'll be some cases where it's two steps forward and one back. But we were in a condition where it seemed like it was one step forward and two back. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we're on a road to an improvement. This is going to be a challenging year because we're still at a lower price than really supports new capital allocation to shale development in North America. But for those companies that are really dealing with with debt challenges, the ability to manage their debt challenges is somewhat improved, and it wouldn't surprise me if we don't see further progress into the low to mid-40s for oil prices here over the next month or two.
Okay, going back just a little bit, Tom, as we were preparing for this particular interview, you had mentioned something about the Saudis and the Russians. My understanding had been, and I don't know where I saw it, but that there's so much oil over in, like, in Saudi Arabia that they could have a very low price of oil, and that would work for them. And then you brought to mind that they've got a lot of things that depend on oil. And so, I read somewhere, or I thought I saw a headline that said that Saudis could survive on $2 to $3 a barrel oil. But that isn't true. And explain to our listeners why.
Sure. They do have, in some of their historic production, low lifting costs, low operating costs, and so on. But this is the main product that they have to generate trade credits so that they can import a lot of other things that they can't produce themselves, including food and a lot of other things that they need as a country that is proud of having developed a 21st century infrastructure. So they really need the much higher prices in order to fund running the government, having a secure system in their government, including an army, and doing other things that they have in the way of providing leadership in the Middle East. So their break-even prices are quite a bit higher than this. They're even higher on their all-in costs in order to run the country and keep it as a stable and contented, if you will, society. We're really talking mid-70s to the low 80s. Per barrel as a price that they
really
need. They can go for 6 months or a year at lower prices, but they're jeopardizing the ability to be functional longer term if they try to go longer than that. And that's what really came through with this recent experience. So $20 a barrel and lower was really painful for them, and they came to recognize it. It's almost relearning the lesson of the Thanksgiving surprise of 2014, which they learned in 2015 pretty quickly, and they re-reminded themselves, if you will.
What about the Russians? What's their price that they need to have?
They're somewhat lower, but they have the same challenge that fundamentally this is their primary, this and natural gas are their primary ways of generating credits to pay for their other imported needs, and they have them as well. Plus, they have a very ambitious program, Putin's program to restore the greater Russia. He's making progress on it, but with his initiatives in the Middle East, where he's arguing that he's a force for stability, and his other initiatives in Asia and elsewhere are such that they have a need for oil that's just somewhat above where the U.S. would be, and that would be mid-50s to low 60s, and I'd say Russia high 50s to mid 60s. So both of them have an incentive. Having successfully really curtailed capital allocation in North America at this point, they're going to want to edge up there to a price that's a lot closer to their objectives, but not so high that they just get the shale revolution going on. And the key to that is, in our industry, in North America, creativity was brought forth when prices dropped in the mid 5 years ago. And this, I would argue the same thing's going to happen here. The technological advances that our industry's developed in North America are such that they're still lowering break-even prices. And so it's a dynamic picture economically for both of these countries.
Okay, during this disruption, though, there's been some real damage to our independent oil and gas producers. What does that look like right now?
Yeah, you're quite right. There are a number of companies that because of the opportunities they saw, took on more debt than is appropriate for oil that's now at $34 a barrel. It's a different situation at 55 to 65. And so there's a real workout required. And some of that workout, first and foremost, has to be with the debt holders. And then following that, one can then begin to see consolidation, achievement of scale, and so on. But that's going to be a protracted process that takes several years, not several months.
And what about the technology you mentioned? That is one of the things, you know, the hydraulic fracturing, the horizontal drilling has been so creative, because I remember in the 80s when Jimmy Carter said that we were going to run out of oil and gas. And then here we get to, 2020 or 2000, the 2000s anyway, and we are actually an exporter, and it's because of creativity and innovation in the industry. So what do you see coming down the pike on that, Tom Petrie?
No, you're quite right, Kim. What we have now, we've redefined the resource base. It's one thing when you're trying to produce from oil from fields where oil was generated in a source rock and migrated elsewhere, and there were certain definitive limits there. When we realized that we could actually move back to rock where the oil was actually generated, we multiplied the nature of the resource base as long as the energy going in was a fraction of the energy coming out. And that's the essence of fracking. Fracking is such that it is energy intensive. You have to put energy in the ground to break the rock up. But as long as you're dealing with 5 to 7 and sometimes 8 or 10 times the energy out that you're putting in, you've got a very viable economic proposition with a resource potential that was much larger than before the shale revolution. That's still true, and prices are going to fluctuate. But when we get better confidence about the long-term potential of prices to be back in that mid-50s to mid-60s range, that redefined potential of the U.S. potential and the rest of North America, for that matter, comes back to the fore.
Well, and this is our Health and Hydrocarbons show, and affordable, reliable, and efficient energy has done more to help people live thriving, prosperous, healthy lives than almost anything else out there. And my story is that my grandmother was born in a sod house on the plains of western Kansas, and a sod house is the original environmental house. It's made out of dirt and earth, but it's amazing. Just two generations later, her granddaughter has all of these conveniences here, and I submit to you, Tom Petrie, it's because of efficient, reliable, and affordable energy.
You're quite right.
Okay, let's go to break. When we come back, I want people to hear your story. It is the story of the American perseverance, tenacity, and grit. And with at this point in time, so many people unemployed, and I think that we're going to get back to employment. But your story is an amazing one, and I'm excited for you to share that with our listeners. This is Kim Munson. I'm talking with Tom Petrie. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to-go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouthwatering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, KimMunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's KimMunson.com. Podcasts of the shows can be found there. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. And you can always email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. On the line with me is Tom Petrie with Petrie Partners. He's an oil and gas energy expert. Petrie Partners is an oil and gas investment banking firm. And this is our health and hydrocarbon show because reliable, efficient, and affordable energy makes our lives better. And but we're going to change just a little bit of our focus. When we were preparing for this show, Tom shared with me his story of how he got involved in this industry. And these stories need to be shared with folks, particularly our young people. As we're facing right now, there's quite a bit of unemployment. There's always opportunity. So Tom Petrie, I am so excited for you to share your story. So tell us, where did what happened exactly as you were getting into your career?
Thanks, Kim. Well, I came home in late 1970 from Vietnam, and I had 6 more months to go of military service, and so I was beginning to try to figure out how to get into the job market. We'd had the recession of 1970, and it was an auto-induced recession. Not as deep as what we're dealing with now, but certainly there were lots of after effects, and getting a job wasn't easy. So I sent out. I'd been able to get my coursework done for an MBA while I was overseas in Germany before I went to Vietnam, and I sent out 100 resumes to various companies. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. Certainly didn't particularly focus it on energy. But out of that 100 resumes, I got basically one reply, and it was from a company called First Boston. So I went for an interview, and it was a very short interview because they were explaining that to me that they were only going to hire a few people that year. They were going to hire 20 people for their training program, and they had 800 applicants.
Wow.
And that about terminated the interview, except I decided to say, well, I want to, I reached out to you because I wanted to go back to Boston. I had some good personal reasons to be back there. And I said to the fellow, well, I understand that, it's probably not a good use of your time or my time to continue this interview, but can you give me some advice on how I should interview for a job in Boston? And he thought about it for a moment. He said, yes, let me just a minute. I'll go and I'll be right back. He came back in a few minutes and gave me a list of the top clients of First Boston in money management, the money managers. And there were top 50. And so I took that home and I sent out 50 more resumes. And it was more focused on the investment business and so on. And out of those, I basically got two or three references, one of which ended up being the job I got. And at first, I went for the interview there, and after I did the interview, they said, well, we're going to only hire one person this year, and we've made an offer to somebody from MIT Sloan School of Management. If he takes the job, we won't have an opening, but we've enjoyed the interview with you, and we'd like to consider you. So if he doesn't take the job, we'd love to talk to you further. Give us a call in a week. I called him a week later, and they said, well, he did take the job, but we thought some more about what you had to say about what your goals were, what your preparation had been up to this point, and so on. And so come on in for another interview. We had another interview, and at the end of it, they said, well, we have decided we have a little more room than we thought we had. And so here's our job offer. I said, great. And at the end of it, I said, by the way, what am I going to do? And they said, well, we liked you a lot. And our oil analyst hasn't been working out so well. So he's moving on to something else, and we'd like you to come in and pick up the coverage of the oil sector and the portfolios. This firm managed, at that time, endowments for MIT and Dartmouth College and a series of mutual funds, and it became a real opportunity for me. And then the final big thing was, a couple years later, I had an opportunity to branch out into some other sectors to become a portfolio manager, but I made the decision, I think I'll stick with energy because energy is so darn important to the overall U.S. economy, and I've had opportunities over the last 48 years to branch out elsewhere, but staying with this sector has really been beneficial. But the tenacity you mentioned was there because when you think of the ratios, 100 to 1 on the first round and it was about 50 to 2 on the second round. But sticking with it is something I would encourage everybody dealing with the challenges today to really look to whatever you can. And when you get rejection, try to figure out, all right, what have I learned from this? What can I do with it? Where else can somebody help me figure out how to continue to network so I land in an opportunity that I can build on?
And so, Tom, with that, when somebody is rejected, I find it interesting that instead of, you know, just saying, you know, taking that rejection initially, that you said, well, tell me, you know, how can I, you know, and that question, just because you asked that question, that is really where I see it opened up a lot of doors for you.
It did. It really did. It was, you know, and it was something I'd learned somewhat in the military as well, that you're going to deal with adversity. But the key is when you're in a situation and you say, boy, this is adversity, you have to say, okay, what can I do to overcome that adversity? And it can be different in every situation, but continuing to think through that rather than letting the adversity just take control of your mindset is really important.
Now, one other thing that people may not know about you is that you attended West Point. And my other show, I've interview veterans. Mm-hmm. And actually, I've interviewed over 130 World War II veterans. So I'm gaining more and more of an appreciation of our military and just how that all works. What would you say is one of the main things that you learned when you attended West Point?
I learned a lot that at the time I wasn't realizing how I was learning it. But one of the key elements of leadership, in my mind, is to understand that the people in a leadership role or a management role need to understand that it's not just a matter of catching people doing something wrong and getting them to correct it. There's a lot of that, but if you want to be effective in doing that, you need to make sure you're trying to keep that you're watching what they do and catching them first and foremost doing things right. And if you catch them doing things right three times for every one time you find them doing it wrong, when you tell them they're doing something wrong, they're going to want to be back over on that where you caught them doing something right and express your appreciation to them for doing it right. And that basic element of leadership came out of the entire program at West Point, and then I got to put it to use both in Germany and Vietnam in a way where I began to realize how powerful that element of leadership or management effectiveness really, really is.
You know, and one of the things at least I have heard about Patton is that, you know, it was amazing. Patton moved the Third Army so quickly in World War II that he had trouble with the supply lines keeping up with him. But one of the reasons that he was able to do that is his men realized that he would not ask them to do anything that he was not willing to do. And that I've always thought that was a really interesting observation about Patton. What's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely right. And in addition to that, the one of the top fuel officers for Patton was Leon Hess, the founder of Amerada Hess, now today Hess Corporation. And I got to meet my first year, about 6 months into my job as an oil analyst, I met Leon Hess. And he passed away now, it's hard to believe, almost 20 years ago. But for over a 20-year period, he was a special friend, and he was the man who was stressed by Patton because he was pushing so hard to make sure those tanks were moving in the direction of Germany across Europe. But he was, and Leon learned a lot from General Patton about effective management of fuel supply lines as well.
Oh, that's absolutely fascinating. Tom Petrie, I so enjoy these conversations with you, and to learn more about this, your perseverance, tenacity, this whole American idea of not giving up, continuing on and asking those questions. So thank you so much. This is our Health and Hydrocarbon Show, and efficient, reliable, and affordable energy helps make our lives better. So Tom Petrie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim. Have a good day.
You too, as well. And, you know, it is so important that we realize that we take so much for granted, and we need to be grateful for all of these people that have been gone before us. And we need to protect these things that have given us this great American life that we have. So today, as we are moving forward, I've got a great quote for you. And this, again, is from James Michener. And this is what he said. He said, "Character consists of what you do on the third and fourth tries." And I thought that was very relevant to Tom Petrie's story there. So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Young, like a new